listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. Episode 208, Luca.
Oh, you went up to the surface again, didn't you? Didn't you?
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling.
And I am Chelsea Robson. Hey, Morgan, have you ever been to Italy?
I have not, but I would love to go to Italy. Have you?
I have been to Italy. I've spent a grand total of 4 days in Italy, and I want to go back after watching Luca.
Of course, right? I never wanted to go to Italy, you know, up until maybe the past 5 years. I didn't see why everyone wanted to go there, what was so cool about it. It was just like, eh, there's other places that I could go, but Italy is drawing me in. It's pasta, it's vineyards, it's landscape, it's seaside villages. I'm like, ooh, see.
Bring it.
But this movie was really cool, really fun, and I loved the Italian setting. So let's dive right into it, shall we?
Andiamo.
Splash.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo, bros.
Good job.
Tu sei l'amore, il solo amore. Io sono felice accanto a te.
All right, so for our main discussion today, we are talking about Pixar's newest animated film, Luca. Obviously, the studio was Pixar Animation Studios. The director was Enrico Casarosa, who you might know from the short film that came out in 2012 before Brave called La Luna. Particularly the dad character, Julia's dad, is to me just straight ripoff of the dad in La Luna. Like the character designs are very similar.
Homage.
And you can tell.
Yes. Not ripoff. Homage.
Well, I mean, when you're the director of both, you can
That's true.
Yeah, it's my style. It's my thing. So it's definitely in his style. And I love it because
it's my actor of choice.
Mm-hmm. It came out June 18th, 2021. The budget, unclear. We do not know at this point. And the box office, it has done a $5 million. And that's because it was released nearly exclusively on Disney Plus. It was going to be released as a theatrical release, but then back in March, they decided that, no, we're not going to do that because of the pandemic, which shall not be named. And they pulled it back. But this is just so confusing to me. Like, they're kind of all over the place with their, are we releasing them? Are we not? Because Raya was a dual theatrical release and Disney Plus. And then Cruella, same thing. And so I don't understand why they went ahead with those two and they pulled this one back. I don't know why they're doing it to the Pixar films, because it's three films in a row that like the Pixar theatrical releases have really gotten the shaft. It's been Onward, Soul, and this one. And this one, it was so perfectly set up for theaters. I think it could have done so well. It makes me really sad that they just didn't decide to go forward with it.
This was actually a huge drama within the Pixar community, and the Pixar employees were really upset. I was reading on IMDb in their trivia section, and they basically said that, you know, putting the fact that Disney went out and put this on Disney Plus exclusively, but also didn't put it behind a paywall. They're like, yeah, you know, we can see you doing that for Soul because it was like in the middle of this all, but because like doing it twice in a row, and then also with like the vaccine rollout ramping up and like basically most of the country opening up to this degree.
Anyone who wanted the vaccine has had the chance for a long time at this point.
Yeah.
The pandemic is basically over. Okay. Mm-hmm. We might get hate for this, but let's be real. It is basically over and we need to move on. And people are moving on because of the vaccines and everything that's happened there. I mean, Disneyland opened officially last week. You didn't have to wear a mask. Like, it's just frustrating. And I could see how the Pixar community, actually the artists and the people who worked on this, could be pretty frustrated too, that Luca's, it's almost like it was released last year in 2020 in the heat of it.
Right. Well, and also you realize that, you know, when a movie goes to theatrical, a lot of times the employees get a bonus if it gets above a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm, and so you can also see like, hey, we're not really able to get any type of a fundage here. And I would be ticked. I don't blame them.
I would be mad too, because there is definitely prestige with a film being released in theaters. Even though, you know, it may not be the future anymore, it is the set way for the past 100 years, for the lifetime of cinema. And there is so much prestige to being a theatrically released film versus the, quote, direct-to-video. That has such a stigma to it, you know? And for the fact that there's so much more recognition and you're still able to get awards and whatnot, but as far as having your hard work being seen in front of the world, it's just a second way. It's the main way that it was been done this entire time. So I'm mad. I'm ticked for them. I am mad that this was not released in theaters. This was a perfect summer family film.
Yeah. Well, and they, I've seen the, you know, their feeling is that it starts to give like the impression that studio, like the Pixar studio, isn't very respected by the Disney execs. Mm-hmm. Like it's a secondary studio. When it's like, this is actually, Pixar is celebrating its 35th anniversary. And it was always one of the top-notch films, production studios.
And Pixar saved your butts, Disney. Don't forget that.
Exactly. And it's, I mean, just the whole thing, it's like, are you trying to make this like a tiered system here? Are you trying to turn it into, you know, another, you know, a secondary film shop? But it shouldn't be. And you know, that also gets me into the whole discussion on the fact that they bought Blue Sky, like they shut it down. And then you also have any other studio that they end up buying, they've just turned it into a monopoly. And then they shut all these things down. We're like, nope, we don't care for you. We just wanted your catalog. And it's just annoying. I'm like, as an animation fan, I am really ticked off about the whole thing, I'll be honest. And it's not just, you know, there's a lot of people who are like just straight up Disney fans. Like, I don't care. It's all Disney. But me, I'm not. I appreciate the fact that there are other people, other voices, and multiple people out there trying to create something cool. And the fact that they are not respecting other people and they're building a hierarchical, like, business tier, like, I just don't like it. And I'm not a fan. To all the Pixar employees, I'm on your side. You deserved a theatrical release. That's all I'm going to say. Also, the fact is that this is the second movie not to have John Ratzenberger in this. Like, what? This is not the Pixar that I have grown to love. Like, the execs have messed it up. If you are taking away the theaters and John Ratzenberger, no.
Right. Yeah, he has become just this fun little Easter egg. You know, sometimes he had big roles. It was just other times it was just a little, you know, a little voice here and there. But it's sad. This is a new era of Pixar which, you know, their movie studios come in different ages. If you look at Disney Animation, there's, you know, the silver era and the golden era and the Renaissance era. And, you know, they have all these different eras that define them. And so obviously it makes sense that Pixar likewise has that, and there's going to be changes. And I don't know why John Ratzenberger is no longer involved. Maybe he's just asking, he was asking too much. He just knew they were going to come back every single time or what, but it's just kind of a bummer because I always love seeing his little Easter egg here and there. But let's talk about Luca, because what were your first thoughts about this film? First recollections? Obviously, we can't talk about our theater experience. We did not see it in theaters.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of the trailers, so I didn't have much to go on looking into it. It just looked to me like, you know, life under the sea is better than anything they got up there. You know?
Right.
So the whole thing, as I'm starting to watch this, I'm just like, ah, let's see the plot. Okay, he dreams of life out of the sea and wishes he could be part of that world. Like, I felt like this was Little Mermaid right from the beginning. And it does have a lot of similarities to it, but I will also say that there are similarities to other things too.
Yeah, so initially, like you, I haven't been too involved in the promotion of this film. It was just announced last year. And, you know, here it came and went. And so even up until a week ago, I thought that it was going to be released theatrically and was planning on taking my kids. I was just really out of the promotion for this film. And so then when I didn't get a screener for it, because of bad communication on my part, I was like, oh, crap, how am I going to get a screener? I guess we'll have to go see it in the theaters. And then someone mentioned me. They're like, no, it was you. You're like, no, yeah, it's just on Disney Plus. I'm like, oh, not even paywall Disney Plus, just straight up Disney Plus. So that was interesting. But going back to the Little Mermaid comparison, as I first started watching this, I'm like, okay, lives under the sea, kind of a mer creature, if you will, not necessarily a mermaid or a merman, but a sea creature. Cool. Okay. Yeah. Mer kid. And he's collecting, you know, gadgets and gizmos aplenty. Okay, cool. Oh, he wants to go up to the surface. Oh, right. He has parents that do not want him to go up to the surface. That is the dark, shadowy place, right? I'm like, come on, Pixar, you're better than this. This cannot be Little Mermaid. And those things aside, which happen within the first 5-10 minutes, we very quickly get to, no, this is not Little Mermaid. And of course they weren't going to do that. But at first I was like, oh,
are you going to do this?
What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Well, especially since they're in the middle of doing a Little Mermaid live action.
Yeah.
Which it's like, oh no, I'm not going to speak for Morgan, but I am not in general, I am not a fan of the live action remakes.
Second,
I motion. Am a animation purist. So like, here we go.
One thing that I love about this film was its setting. I thought that the setting in Italy in the summer just was so just nostalgic in a way. Like, I love that this film is very much just a summer kids film. What do kids do in the summertime when they have all the time in the world, you know? And it's really this coming of age story where he's meeting this friend who is so different than him. Luca is very reserved and not as confident. And he meets Alberto, who's the opposite, who is just going to teach him all these things and have a great time and show him the world. And they're, you know, the scene where they create that little Vespa and they're trying to figure out how to get it to go on the ramp is just so fun. And it just takes you back to being a kid, mm-hmm, in the heat of the summer, just enjoying hanging out with your friends. You know, there's lots of visuals, you know, with all the kids eating the watermelon. And mm-hmm, this was just a very nostalgic feeling of a film. And it very much gave me vibes of Sandlot and The Little Rascals. You know, those are kind of, you know, kids, uh-huh, hanging out, being kids. Sandlot specifically is in the summer, meeting new, yeah, friends, and then kind of parting ways at the end for some of them. And I really liked it. The film is very simple, but it totally works for that.
Yeah, and I didn't make this connection because I haven't seen the other movie, but a lot of people and even the director himself say that Hayao Miyazaki's film Ponyo was one of the major influences for this. Mm-hmm. So he said that Miyazaki was one of the main influences and even was going to name, like, have the surname of Luca be Porto Rosso, but then they decided to switch it and named the city that he go to as Porto Rosso. So, which is a deliberate nod. Because
they were going to call it Porto Rosso as a nod to Porco Rosso, the film. Yeah. Which is just fun.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like what also was, and you say that, it, you know, it's very nostalgic. That was the other thing I saw IMDb. Here's the thing. There aren't a lot of places to find all this background information about this movie because it really just came out. And so IMDb trivia gets the nod for this. But that's where most of my background information is coming from.
Just because it's so new. I also I have the art book. And so I was looking at the art book. And this art book is not as historical documenting the creation of the film heavy.
Okay.
It's more art heavy with like a few little paragraphs here and there, which I like both of those. I like when I can learn so much about the history of the film and the making of the film. It's kind of like a making of book. This one wasn't necessarily that. It was just more, here are the sketches, here are the characters, here's the development, here's what we didn't use.
Yeah. So the director said that he indicated that the plot, basically this shy, reserved kid who benefits from a nonconformist type friend who pushes him into becoming more open, is directly based on his own experience as a child. So he's like, my own friend was this friend, but I couldn't name the movie after me, so I just called it Luca because it, you know, sounded better in English and Italian. So I was cool.
I read that his friend was named Alberto, and so he names, you know, Luca's friend Alberto as an homage to him, and that friend even plays kind of a background character in the Italian version of the film, which is super cool. Yeah, I love it. I mean, hey, that's nepotism at its greatest. Like, hey,
I love it.
This was a defining moment for me, and now I'm making a story about that, so of course you're coming along.
Right. Morgan, I expect the same of you.
Of course, yes. There will be a character named Chelsea in my first movie.
Perfect. Oh, man. I think that a lot of the characters were really well played. Mm-hmm. So first off, you got Luca Pagoro. I really love the Italian influences of this film. I have always been a fan of, you know, just the romance languages specifically, and then also just, you know, the travels type. And so the influences of that, as opposed to something that I'm more used to, which is like a Spanish influence or Portuguese in my life specifically. But the Italian, I haven't seen a lot of movies that are, you know, there's Life is Beautiful, which is also a wonderful movie. But for the most part, you don't see a lot of Italian films being brought over to the United States. So it was fun to see that as like a full out, this is what it is, and it's not apologizing for what it is. And so you had the Jacob Tremblay, who was actually the voice of Luca. You may remember him from such films as The Wonder. He played the main character, Augie, which is where I first saw him. He, randomly enough, will also be playing the voice of Flounder in the upcoming Little Mermaid live action. So, interesting. Cool. Mm. And then Alberto Scorfano.
Put that accent on the right place, Chelsea.
Yes. Jack Dylan Grazer. He was a.k.a. Freddie Freeman from Shazam. I loved him in that film. It's one of those, like, of the DC films that I'm like, I can get behind this one. It's fun. Yeah. I really liked them as a duo. I felt like they worked out really well together, and they definitely brought the aspects, the defining aspects of each character to life.
Yeah. Another influence that I got from this film was it felt very much like The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
Where Tom Sawyer goes and he meets Huck Finn. And they kind of go off and have these adventures. Not necessarily. Tom Sawyer's very much a little naughty kid.
Right.
But, you know, Tom.
Or Luca's the opposite. He's a good kid. I don't do these things.
I know he is. But Huck very much is like an Alberto, where he's like way off just doing his own thing and doesn't care, you know. But at the very end, Tom Sawyer kind of, I'm thinking too, I know I've read the book, but I'm also thinking about Huck and Finn. Jonathan Taylor Thomas, you know, I just have that image of him running away at the end. You know, they try to dress him up and make him nice, and he just runs away and kind of throws the fancy clothes away. And that's kind of, in a way, what ends up happening to Luca at the end. Not that he's abandoning his life, but he's chosen a kind of a different path. So Yeah, I loved it. I thought they were a really great duo. It just felt real. It felt like two kids that really would end up being friends together. And obviously it is based in reality. So that's, they had a lot to pull from. And I think a lot of us have experiences like that. And I just love the pace of this film. I just loved at the very beginning when we meet them, how Luca is just so wants to be a part of this world. He's so interested and he's curious and but still very afraid because he has all these things that his parents have told him about coming up, you know, to the surface and the land people, I guess. And so he's very cognizant and nervous about what he's doing and doesn't want to go all in, you know. So I think they have that great montage where it's like 30 minutes later. 45 minutes later to do the SpongeBob thing, you know, where he keeps coming back and he's not going back where he needs to go. And he's spending more and more time away. And I liked that very beginning because we got to really build their friendship as they are spending time together and just building this fun little podunk Vespa.
This was just like a 1 hour and 27 minute commercial for Vespa. And I was all here for it.
Yes.
I was like, good.
Because it's so timeless, right? If they, I feel like since it's been around such a long time, it's kind of this timeless, very European brand where it just doesn't feel like, ugh, GMC in your face or whatever it would have done, right?
Exactly. There's also a lot of connections from Vespa, the scooter, to the actual region where this film was supposed to be placed. Like the guy who invented it in the first factory, we're all in this little area. So there are a lot of nods to this heritage that the director had, because you know that's where he would go and spend summers and kind of live in that area. I was like, that's really cool. I love that.
I liked when they met Julia. She was a fun new character to kind of pair them off, because these two, they're different for sure, but they have this bond that they're sea creatures. And even before we meet Julia, we can tell that they have different motivations, kind of. But really when Julia comes into the mix is when we really get to see, you know, what each of their these characters' driving forces is. You know, Luca, he just wants to explore and learn. He's just a sponge and he's soaking it all up. And Julia really introduces him to a lot of things that he wasn't aware of before, you know, that, oh, it's not actually fish, you know, it's not great fireflies in the sky from Lion King, right? It's big balls of gas, millions and millions of miles away. You know, she introduces him to that with this telescope and he's like, oh, Alberto was wrong. And it really kind of shakes his world for the first time, because he thought Alberto was a character who really knew everything about this world up here. And so it kind of creates a little wedge, because he realizes that he doesn't have to rely on Alberto for everything, whether consciously or not. And then at the same time, Alberto, you know, because he's been abandoned by his father, and we don't get any reason for that. The father doesn't appear later on. It's just, it is what he is. It is. And the father never came back. Alberto really just wanted someone who would always be there for him, and kind of that he could boss around. You can see there's different elements, especially once Julia comes around, where he wants to take over and he doesn't want Julia to really be in charge. So I thought that was interesting, you know. And Julia kind of reminded me of a character. She reminded me of Ellie from Up a little bit in her design and kind of her spunkiness. And then my kids, they watch the Curious George PBS show, and there's a little redheaded girl kind of gave me vibes of her, but yes, I loved her. I thought she was really great. And she introduces the plot point that really the rest of the film is driving to, which is this race. And I thought it was great. I thought, you know, like we said, this is a very simple film. It works on so many levels. It just has, it's deep for sure on different elements. And the characters are well-rounded and they have motivations that are each unique to them. But yeah, once Julia comes around, then it's driving us to this point and this conflict of this race. We want to, both of these characters want to get that Vespa. That's all they ever want. They just want to hang around together and drive around Italy in their Vespa, have a great time. And how can we get that? We need to win the race to get the money to do it.
Well, what's interesting, you see, you bring in the Vespa, and I think both of them have different, the Vespa means different things to them. So for Luca, it means learning and it means going to new places and seeing new things. While Alberto, it means my friend. He's going to be with me. This is a thing we can do together. And you sent me a video talking about The Little Mermaid and
Lindsay Ellis, who is a Lindsay very Ellis. Prolific video essayist. She has great. She's amazing. She has over a million subscribers on her YouTube channel. She was formerly part of Channel Awesome, known as the Nostalgia Chick. But nice. She does her own videos now. Well, she's great.
Yeah. And she did a really interesting essay on The Little Mermaid and pointed something out that I had never realized, that the main person to have an arc in The Little Mermaid wasn't actually Ariel. Ariel just has a driving force goal and is just plummeting and just going as far as she can to get that goal. And there's really no arc to her. But the people that that are around her, mainly King Triton, her dad, has the arc where he starts out one way and then changes. And it is through his decision to actually move the progress forward. And so I felt that was really interesting when I heard that. And then watching this, it's the same thing, where it is Alberto that has the arc. So Alberto's the one that has to change, that he's the one that has to let go and has to move past one that his dad left him, but also that his new friend Luca is probably better off doing something else rather than sticking around with him. And so he has to be the one to make all the changes and to help move this whole thing forward. But it is the driving goal of and the situation of Luca that forces him to, one, get off the island, and then, two, become the better person and to sell the Vespa, which they had brought together, and to give him the money so that he could go and go to school. But then also in that, he discovers a new home in the fact that he's now going to be the unofficial stepson, adopted kid of Julia's dad. So...
Well,
good
he's
times.
Also going to make him loads and loads of money because he knows exactly where the fish hang out. I'm sorry. No, you are not going to school. I will adopt you. I will love you. You will eat pasta every single day of your life, and you are going to catch boatloads and boatloads of fish. Thank you.
Perfect. Just in the fact that they used that plot device was very interesting, especially since I had just watched that essay and I was like, so from the very beginning, I'm wondering, okay, whose arc are we going to follow in this? Because you could tell that Luca, like, who was going to be the one that made the changes here? So Luca, as I was going through, I was like, he's not changing. So who is the change?
The parents do change a little bit too. And they're interesting because we don't ever get a reason why they can't go up to the surface, why it's bad. It just is. Yeah. And it's not really their story, and it's not really important that we have a backstory. We don't need a Moana, someone died on the ocean, right? Or someone went up there and died and a person killed them. It's just kind of a given at this point, based on how the people up above treat monsters and clearly have their entire lives. Yeah. But here's my thing with this. The fact that the sea creatures can turn into humans once they come up onto land and everyone does it no matter what, that's a feature, not a flaw. So this is something that, everyone has. So why are they not taking advantage of it? It's not like, hey, you're the only one that can do this, or you have to go to a sea witch to do this. There's no other way out. It's literally you have camouflage for going up there. So once you're up there, you're fine. It's not like you're Ariel when she turns back into a mermaid on the boat, right? Because the spell has run out. No, you literally grow legs and turn into a human. So what's the problem?
Yeah, and I think that that's a better question to ask Luca's grandma.
she goes out every weekend, so... Well, and I also love that moment where at the very end where the two old ladies just are like, oh, hey, everyone else is doing this.
Right, exactly.
They turn.
All right, I guess so.
I was kind of expecting more. It would have been interesting to have even more people where you realize like a third of the people in this town actually are sea creatures rather than just Luca, Alberto, the parents, and the old ladies. Basically, the old lady version of Ron and John, even though I know they weren't based on anyone, but you know how Ron and John are in Aladdin. Little cameo.
Another suitor for the princess.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can definitely understand weirdos like his uncle Ugo, who also voiced by Borat, like Sacha Baron Cohen. Like, yeah, that was also an interesting thing, is both everybody in Luca's family are all famous, like comedians. So you have Jim Gaffigan, who was played Lorenzo Paguro, and then you have Daniela Paguro, played by Maya Rudolph. So it's like
Maya Rudolph. Right. She's like the mom in all of these films. She was the aunt character in Big Hero 6, and I feel like there's just so many that she is. She's the go-to comedian.
I guess we're there. I was really glad to see Jim Gaffigan in there. I was like, yeah. I like him. You're funny.
Well, he has so many kids. And that's one of the things that's he jokes about all the time. It's just, there's kids everywhere in his life. And so it makes sense that he's a dad. But yeah, they live a pretty boring life under the sea. You know, they have this little house. It's not necessarily part of a village or a city. In some of the art books, it was much more of a mirror image of a city underneath the city. There's a really cool image in the art book where it shows that, where it's just like a very bustling city underneath the ocean. But yeah, we're not really introduced to any other sea creatures. We assume they're there. We meet a few here and there, but it's not like they're super connected. So it seems like they live a bit more rural, so no one's around them.
Yeah. Well, and he was like a fish shepherd.
Yes. Like, how did they get to that? That was great. But it totally worked.
I think that was probably one of the parts that felt a little undeveloped for me, is just that beginning part of like what he is and what they do and why. And it was just, what? Okay. And then
so they have... So they have 24 fish that he looks after. Kind of, they're supposed to be sheep, right? Right. And this was Pixar's 24th film. And so each one of those kind of represented one of the films in the Pixar library, if you will. And I thought it was cute. I thought it was fun. But here's the thing. So up above, you know, he's a shepherd of fish. So they seem to have a dominant relationship over fish, like, you know, just as we would over sheep or other barnyard animals. And then later they help them catch fish. So it doesn't seem like there's any sort of moral issue with them helping you catch fish and eat fish, because they must eat fish too.
Yeah, that must be a thing.
It's not like it's their equivalent of their dogs or, you know, household friends.
Or friends. Cousins. Yeah, it's not like a flounder thing, like, yes, where everybody has a soul type.
Well, I don't know, except for in The Little Mermaid, there's like that shrimp guy who definitely has a face and a soul, and she just straight up eats him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what makes her evil, though.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah, so it seems like fish are totally fine. Like, we'll help you catch fish, sure.
They're like the cattle, you know?
Like, yes, okay. Exactly. It's like, yeah. Yeah.
It's a thing. So speaking of random animal sidekicks, the cat was a really great gag.
Yeah.
And then the thing is, like, they named it after an Italian philosopher, Niccolo Machiavelli, who is, you know, the name Machiavellian is basically synonymous with, you know, super evil person and like looking to go out of your way to make somebody else's life really bad. So the fact that this cat is Machiavelli
is the epitome of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, plus animals they just have like a sixth sense, you know, they're able to determine, you know, if you're riding a horse can tell that something is bad and you shouldn't go forward, or they can just sense things that, you know, for example, certain animals won't eat certain things because they know it's bad, right? Like, for example, margarine. Flies and insects will not even land on margarine because they know that it is basically just plastic. It is not good for the body. It is not natural. And so they don't even touch it. It will not decompose. And they know that, right? So they just have this other senses to the natural world, if you will, that we don't have. And so I just thought that was great that, like, he was in on them, which is kind of funny because typically cats eat fish or things that are in the sea. So even more of a reason, he's like, I do not like you, your food. A giant, giant buffet for sure. But
and he's just always staring. So the cat, you know, he had this little mustache thing going, and he's like all staring at you like, I get you. I know you. I just thought it was great.
Well, speaking of mustache, we have this main antagonist, Ercole, who I thought was an adult when he first appeared, but apparently he's an older teenager, and I guess this is a competition for kids, so he's probably inching. He says he's 16. I'm 16 now. I thought you were 16 last year. But the other kids are about 13. So he's significantly older than them. And he's definitely the bully.
Yeah.
And he has that little, I'm starting to get facial hair mustache, which is so gross. Please, parents, as soon as your kids have that, just hand them a razor. It'll society will thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironically, he is the big fish in a small pond.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he gets his whole self-being, self-worth from the fact that he wins this cup every year for the last 6 years running.
Well, it's like, yeah, you're bigger and stronger than and older than everybody else.
Yeah.
He kind of had this the typical bad guy with henchmen, you know, who are kind of reluctant henchmen. And at the very end, they turn on him. I feel like that's a very common thing. They're kind of around just because he's the only one. And, you know, mm-hmm. you hook your wagon to someone in power. But
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of seemed inevitable that they were going to win the race and he was going to be dethroned. But she had that funny moment of like, what if she kept referring to him as like the pinnacle of like evilness or something. What are they?
The reign of terror.
Yes. Oh, that was funny. But there was some really nice moments, you know, like you were saying, the arc is about Alberto. We have the first betrayal where they both land in the water and then she sees him and then the villagers see him and Ercole sees him. Then Luca yells, "Sea monster," you know, and kind of
throws him under the bus.
Call him out. He's not standing up. Yes, throws him under the bus. He's not helping his friend. So that's a huge betrayal. Then they have that great moment where they're talking. Luca goes back to their little island and they kind of talk through it. And that's like the first moment of vulnerability that we've seen with Alberto. He's normally very strong poses and in charge, but here he's kind of hunched over. He's by the fire, just kind of like go away. We get more about his backstory about the dad. You know, I just stopped keeping count after a while. I thought he would come back. He didn't. And then, you know, there's still that rift there. You know, he doesn't come back with them. It's not solved. But then at the very end, Alberto comes back and sacrifices himself again, you know, revealing himself as a sea monster for mm-hmm. Luca. And I thought that was just a really great moment and showed a lot of growth for Alberto as a character. And then he has another moment where he has to grow at the very end where he has to let Luca go.
Yeah.
Really, really strong writing.
Yeah. The fact mm-hmm. that he was able to come in with Massimo, Julia's dad, you know, and like Massimo was so sweet when he was like,
I loved him.
He, when Luca comes in, is like, oh, Alberto's gone. He probably doesn't want you to go looking for him. And he's like, well, maybe he doesn't, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I was like, oh, you're so perfect. Like,
yes.
Why are you divorced or not with your ex? Why are you not with Julia's mom? What's going on there? So,
did they say what happened there?
No.
She died. She's just the classic animation trope. No parent.
Well, she's in the end credits. Like I saw they have like, there was a trivia thing on IMDb said that she goes and like introduces Luca to her mom and so you see
totally missed that.
Yeah, I missed that too, but she wasn't actually in there. It was just a picture of, you know, a still frame of
Okay, in the end credits like that.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
There was just a lot of that back and forth. I'm like, oh, Massimo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I loved him. I just loved his design. I loved his character. I loved how sweet he was. I loved that he was missing an arm and he was like, I was just born this way.
He starts out, the sea monster took it. And it's like, that's really funny because you have Alberto was like, seriously? Like, who? Probably somebody I know. I was like, no, I just came into the world like this. Like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, and then immediately right after that, they just show how adaptable and capable he is. You know, he doesn't need two arms. He has one. He's very, very accomplished with just one. When he like takes the knife out, cuts up the net and sticks it back in, both the kids are like, whoa.
Yeah. I was a huge fan of the music in this movie.
Yes.
Music itself, like from the soundtrack, was done by Dan Romer, who he's done a lot of really big things, but he's also done a lot of pop music too. So look him up. He's got some cool things going. But then you also have the individual songs that were added, you know, just from somebody went on Spotify probably and was just like, hey, we'll take this Italian theme one, this Italian theme one.
Yeah.
And it was just like, but it was really well chosen and it just really built the world. And I just loved hearing it.
Yeah. So I've been listening to a YouTube channel called Sideways. It's someone who went to music school. And so he dissects film scores and video games and all sorts of things very, very well. He's kind of like the music version of Lindsay Ellis.
Okay.
And I just watch his videos and I dive into them and I binge and binge and binge because they are just all so good. So on his channel, he talks about leitmotifs, and leitmotifs are something that come from classical music. They came from Wagner, however you want to say it. And he was very instrumental in this. And basically a leitmotif is a common theme to represent a character, an emotion, a theme. And there was one in particular that I was paying attention to. And it's just this very nostalgic sort of music that happens anytime something adventurous or whimsical is happening. So anytime they kind of have these fantasies in their head of the gold coins, or he's jumping on the rings of Saturn, or they're flying in the sky, anything like that, they play this music. And the whole point of it is because if you're introducing this film, if you're introducing a leitmotif early on and you keep using it during these moments, you're able to create almost instantly this emotion, you know, later on in the film, because you already have that associated either with like a character. John Williams does this a lot in Star Wars. Each of the main characters has a theme. There's like Rey's theme, or there's Luke's theme. There's the Force theme. Every character has their own little beat, which it's not necessarily always going to be played the exact same way. It might just be like subtly in the background or in the score, or composers are great. I really wish that I had the ability to write songs and master music in that way. It's just very, very talented. But yes, I definitely heard the leitmotif of this like whimsical adventure sound anytime they were doing something like that. And it just like really hit home those emotions right when we needed it. And it felt very Pixar to me, the score. I looked later. I was like, is this Michael Giacchino? It was not, but it definitely felt on brand for Pixar.
Yeah, for sure. Dan also said, I saw an interview on the red carpet for him. He said that he's like, yeah, I basically just listened to all Italian music from the 50s and 60s for like 2 months to make sure that I knew how to do it. I was like, makes sense. Good job. You done good, kid.
Did your studying. Yeah, so speaking of the 50s and 60s, this film was actually set in sort of that era, because that's kind of a very timeless era where things aren't too modernized, but they're not so antiquated that it feels like, oh, people are riding horse and buggy. It's just kind of this timeless, pure era. And so I loved it. Everything about this film was just very nostalgic, very refreshing, and just fun and simple.
Yeah, yeah. And there was one moment that I mean, just because I think I will always remember the moment where Luca is learning how to walk.
Yes.
And he's like moving his shoulders and legs. Like, I can't figure this out. Ah, my tail. Ah, yes. Phantom tail. It's a weird thing to get used to. Like,
yes. Oh, gosh. It's true. Man.
There's also a random thing that when they get on the homemade Vespa, Alberto gives Luca a colander to put on his head.
Yeah.
And he wears that colander for the rest of the time, every time he gets on there, as a helmet. Like, it's amazing.
Like, yeah, he's even wearing it when it's potentially going to rain. And I'm like, that's not going to help keep your head dry. Nope. You're going to have your little spots. Well, so one thing about the character designs, I really love the character designs. And I was looking at the art book on this, is there was lots of ways that they could have gone with these sea monsters, but obviously it's a Pixar film and you want to make your characters likable and visually appealing, right? There has to be this sense of appeal. And I thought that just the way that they designed these characters, you know, they didn't make them mermaids, but they're little sea creatures and they have their tails, they have their scales. But what I loved was just their hair. Their hair to me looked like a cabbage. That's where it had all of those different things and leaves stacking on top of each other. And the scales, the way that they laid on each other, just were very, very beautiful. And overall, the director wanted this to kind of have like a very painterly feel, you know, almost like watercolors. And I definitely got that vibe. And really just everything about this film just felt very fresh.
Yeah. I thought the whole thing was just charming. the music, with the vibe, the character design, and the friendship themes. I just felt like it was very, liked it. I did. I enjoyed it. I felt like it was everything that they wanted to do with it. Or maybe I'm just hoping that they did. Everything that you did, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure the director's like, oh yeah, everything, if you say so.
Well, one thing that we didn't mention was this film was entirely animated at home.
Yeah, that was a really interesting part of this whole thing. After going through the credits part, first I was like, I thought this was really short. It was just very streamlined. And looking at the actual runtime, it's a little under 1 hour and 27 minutes, not including the credits or the post-credit scene.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very end, it says, of the credits, it says that it was produced in our slippers around the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And I just, for anybody who works at Pixar, who worked on this, I have a question for you. And you can send us a voicemail. If you have an answer, I'd love to know if this was easier or harder to do it all from home. Just because, like, I feel like there's one side of it being in the studio together. You get a lot of people going back and forth and a lot of communication. So, like, the communication side probably goes down. But at the same time, like, I do appreciate being able to work from home. So, but maybe that's just me. Like, I want to know what they think.
Yeah, I know for me, when I worked my corporate job, I kind of did a hybrid schedule before that was cool, before that was even a thing. After I had my first baby, I went to my boss and I said, this is the schedule I'm going to work. I'm going to work 3 days at home, 2 days in the office. And it was nice because I felt like I was really able to focus on my projects and get stuff done without being distracted of, hey, let's all go to the massage chairs in the main room, or let's go on a walk. You know, I just felt like I didn't do a lot of those time waster things, but they, at the same time, they built camaraderie, and going to lunch with someone or going on a walk with someone just to get out of the office was very refreshing. And so I liked that both. I don't feel like I would love 100% for me being just like solo, because yes, you are talking to people. You know, you have your Zoom calls and your meetings, but that just never was the same as getting in a room with someone and hashing it out, or having a meeting, or going to lunch. The connections, they are built online, but they're really forged and solidified in person. Just when I got to see people and look them in the eyes for real, it just felt stronger. And I imagine, you know, I worked in a business setting, not necessarily a creative setting, but I imagine, you know, that creative back and forth also would apply. I feel like, yeah, it'd be interesting to hear people's experience.
Yeah.
So with that, what would you rate it, Chelsea?
You know, I think I'm going to give this 4 stars. To me, it just vibrates at that level. There's not a lot of things that I would say were lacking in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it. 4 stars. 4 out of 5 stars. Boom.
I'm going to give it 4 stars as well. I went into this kind of having zero expectations, but knowing, hey, it's Pixar, it's going to be good. I'm always leaving the theater or my home theater experience just uplifted, and I enjoy their films and they're really creative, and they delivered. Absolutely. I just love how simple this film was. And there have been a few critiques on it's just too simple. It doesn't have that Pixar wow. I disagree. I think the simplicity is great because it really captures the essence of childhood in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And this coming of age and a summer to remember. Just, we've all had those very pivotal summers in our life growing up where friendships were formed and relationships and things happened, adventures were had. It's just free-spirited, and I loved it. I loved that it was slower. It really did feel like a Miyazaki film in that way, where Miyazaki films, they take their time. Studio Ghibli, they don't feel like they have to rush into the action. Very quickly, we get him turning into a human, and that sets the plot going, but we take time for him to build that relationship with Alberto, and then likewise to have that relationship with Julia. And there's lots of conflict and resolution and character growth. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I was really excited to show my kids it because I feel like it was a film that, you know, they would resonate with and grow up with as well. And it just captured the essence of childhood very, very well. And 4 stars.
Falla intorno a me, mi parla
All right, we want to know what you guys thought about this movie. You can head on over. We really want to get some voicemails in here because those are all a lot of fun. But until then, we have some 5-star reviews that we want to go over and bring up. From this is if you go into your podcast listening app of choice, then we can see some of your reviews. There's one that says, "This is a great time to chill with friends." This is from P. Brian J. on Apple, and he says, "Love Morgan, Chelsea, and Mason. For the past few years, I've gotten to follow them and listen to them talk as friends, nerding out about the stuff I love hearing and talking about myself. I love their nuggets of philosophy and how their talks can go toward the spiritual and meaningful side of the movies. This continues to lift me up. Sadly, we don't hear much from Mason as much anymore, but listening to Morgan and Chelsea is still one of my favorite times during the week. Thank you guys for keeping us all engaged and excited for the movies we love." Aw, thanks.
5 stars. Thank you. If you want to leave your review, make sure to go to rotoscopers.com/iTunes. We appreciate it if you leave us a 5-star review in Apple iTunes, or it's not called Apple iTunes anymore. It's Apple Podcasts. Ooh. They're really moving away from that iTunes branding, but that's one of the easiest ways to support the show. So thank you so much. When we read a 5-star review every single week. And as always, all of the show notes links for this episode will be at rotoscopers.com/208. I have the link where you can purchase the art book as well as the IMDb and some of the other resources that we mentioned in this podcast. So thank you so much. Be sure to go there. And of course, leave your comments on our Instagram post for this episode. Just go to rotoscopers.com/Instagram, find the Luca post, and let us know your review, what you would rate this film. And with that, our next episode is going to be...
We have an interview with Stephen E. Gordon, which I really enjoyed sitting down and being able to talk to him. Originally, it was... I was going to sit down and talk to him because he worked on The Black Cauldron. And so this is when we were doing The Black Cauldron. But it turns out that he had a connection to other favorites of mine and Morgan's. And it was really embarrassing and really awesome to talk to him. So you'll have to
love it.
You'll have to join in on that one.
Yes. And we also are going to be recording our June Rotocast later this week, where we get to hang out with the patrons. We do trivia questions. We do Q&A. We just have a really, really fun time. We do have a preview of one of our Rotocasts in our podcast feed. So you can go back and listen to that. That was a lot of fun. But this one is exclusively for the patrons. So if you're interested in supporting the show, we love it and we appreciate it so much. Go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon. We have 3 different levels for you. We have diamond level patrons, we have platinum level patrons, and gold level patrons. If you know what each of those are in reference to, then you definitely are a people and you should become a patron. In case you don't know, it's the different releases of the Disney vault over the years. They had the gold release, then the platinum release, and what's better than platinum? Diamonds. And so depending on which one of those levels, we have different perks. Like, you can join us on the show, you have exclusive Rotocasts, and of course you have ad-free episodes. Every single episode, release them a day early for all patrons.
Extra bloopers too.
Extra bloopers. Trust me, there are tons and tons and tons of bloopers in our lives, in our recording sessions. So we save all of the really good ones for the patrons. So rotoscopers.com/Patreon. And I want to give a shout out to our newest patrons who have joined us over the past month, Katie and Kat. Welcome. We are so excited to have you. We will see you on the Rotocast later this week. So with that, and until our next episode, which is so fun and amazing, you won't want to miss that interview. Until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Have this little like walker thing that's in the shape of a car, and if you put him in it, he likes it, and he's quiet, and he likes to look around and see what's happening. So he'll hang out there for the next 15 minutes or so.
I sleep in a race car bed. Do you sleep in a race car bed? I sleep in a big bed with my wife.
Good one. What was I saying? You remember what I was talking about? Okay. Wow. We somehow did it. We recorded it with 2 kids awake and a baby who woke up, who sat here for a good 30 minutes being quiet. Yeah. And hell hasn't broken loose in the other room, at least as far as I can tell. Who knows? Things may be on fire when I walk out there. But
right,
Curious, right. Curious George is on. And the great thing about Curious George, he's curious and naughty, but when my kids are watching him, they are not curious and naughty. They are basically just glued to the TV. They think he is the coolest thing in the world. It used to be all about Daniel Tiger. Then it was Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, which is still a favorite. Then it was Peppa Pig. And now it is Curious George. So, yes, they have their favorites. I try not to introduce them to too many crazy things. I'm like, I don't want you just watching every single show like I did back in the day. Free for all.
I mean, we did that. Okay, cool. what are we calling this? Did we laugh about something?
Did we laugh about something? you could just pull a quote from episode 208. Luca, you went up to the surface again, didn't you? Didn't you? Let me do it again. You went up to the surface again, didn't you? Didn't you? It was so good the first time. You could just include the clip. You could just clip the actual clip from King Trent.
Okay, I'll find that.
Nice. You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.